about Cal Riley makes him so tough to pitch to?
He's not very tough to pitch to when you execute your pitches. You know, he's hitting 200, but it's I know he's done damage against us. And I think if you execute, you know, he's obviously got big, you know, damage potential, and he's got a lot of strikeout potential too. And when you execute your pitches, you usually get the job done.
This is the first extra innings game for the Blue Jays this year. And Cal Raleigh sends the first pitch to deep right and into the Seattle pen. Uh-oh. And Cal Raleigh hurts the Blue Jays again, a two-run homer. And just like that, it's 3-1 Mariners.
I mean, it's not as if John Schneider said Cal Raleigh didn't like baseball or anything. I remember J.P. Ricciardi said that about Adam Dunn, and that kind of followed J.P. Ricciardi.
I didn't listen to J.P.
The rest of us, obviously not. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, yeah. The fan of sports. He gave you your break. He gave you your break.
I remember. Yeah, oh, yeah.
He gave you your break here, as he told us.
Oh, absolutely.
Anyhow, so we've got a full-blown controversy in Blue Jays land. John Schneider, the manager of the Blue Jays, apparently last July made comments about Cal Raleigh. And
what was wrong with this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it made sense. He's right. But, of course, after hitting a home run yesterday to win a game for the Mariners over the Jays, you get the impression, remember how I said that I thought a lot of people were waiting 5 months to boo John Schneider when he pulled Jose Berrios on opening day? I think Cal Raleigh was waiting. He was waiting all year to do this, to get back at John Schneider. So his comments yesterday about John Schneider included the line, quote, a lot of guys have beef with him in the league. I presume he means a beef, unless they're all going over to John's house and barbecuing beef. Cal Raleigh's career against the Blue Jays. We're talking about this because it's an off day today. And if you're going to have controversy, oh, it's so good to have it on an off day. Cal Raleigh against the Jays, this includes regular and postseason, 17 games played, 16 runs, 18 hits, 12 extra base hits, 10 homers, 19 ribbies, 295 average, 820 slug, 1.15 OPS. 1.153 OPS. Don't want to shortchange him. And 5 go-ahead home runs. So, according to Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times yesterday, Cal Raleigh, quote, I know a lot of guys have beef with him in this league, so his comments aren't surprising. I don't have much to say. If you don't have anything nice to say, Kevin, this is what my mother said, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say at all if you don't want it to come back on you. Oh, I love this. Is like deep, deep controversial stuff.
Well, you're there, obviously the one that came up with starting the show like this. I'm wondering why. Like, what are we trying to...
Oh, we're trying to stoke the flames.
Yeah, for what
would you rather start it with?
Well, because, I mean, you know, you say Kikuchi was pretty good. Like, you know, the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit a home run. Like,
that's not what anybody's
saying. Why would I care about two grown-ups saying bad things about each other?
John Schneider,
I mean, was it even bad? Like, what he said was basically true. You throw him a good breaking ball, you're going to get him out. Like, he's like most hitters.
I think when a player suggests that the other team's manager has a bit of a reputation around the league, I talk about it. I mean, we know the whole thing with John Schneider and the Yankees with who was it? He was calling somebody fat boy or something. Like that. You know, I'm just saying.
I mean,
you know that.
I mean, you think the Blue Jays would take a catcher that could hit 30 homers, driving 70 runs, got an OPS of almost 770?
They had one at one point.
Do you think they would like to have that?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, most teams would.
Probably.
And he's just like most guys who are big dudes, who switch hit, who have a big swing, that you can throw them a breaking ball that breaks a lot, and they will swing over top of it, and you can strike them out. John's not wrong. And, I mean, I guess Cal been waiting for a while to say, you know, he's a very bad person.
God bless him for doing it.
Nobody likes him.
There is nothing wrong with a grudge. Grudges are good.
Oh, I despise that dude.
Grudges are good.
You guys playing this. It's tremendous. This is great stuff.
Grudges are great.
I love it.
You think John will join us tomorrow? When he joins us tomorrow.
You should leave with that. Cal said it.
I'm going to say,
he
John.
Said so.
I thought Toronto fans were the only ones who didn't like you, but it turns out that there were a lot of people around.
league that have beef with you, that have beef.
Grown men being kids. Who cares?
Good fun.
I guess. You're a grown-up.
Anybody you had a grudge with?
I didn't care.
Company
I didn't care.
While you played.
I didn't care enough.
Okay.
You know, I tried to be quiet and not notice. That's why I didn't have a walk-up song for 16 years, Jeff. I wanted to sneak up on them.
It worked.
Well, somewhat.
Anyhow.
I think this is funny.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. Like I said, I there's nothing wrong with a little player and manager crime.
See, I thought the sinker from Tim Mays has a decent pitch. Just the velocity wasn't there.
That was a
guy that can hit a home run, getting extended on something, getting the ball in the air that didn't sink. I mean, that was a decent pitch. The Chad Green slider, that was a terrible pitch. That's what you do to terrible pitches. You hit them thanks to the moon.
Mm.
So I sort of like both of them. It's okay for two teams not to like each other. Not to be buddy-buddy. Isn't that the old hockey way? You're like, you know, you punch each other, drop gloves, and fight right out the gate.
Well, the Mariners and the Jays are turning into. Well, it is. Because there's the whole thing of Jays fans going down to Seattle and, you know, and making noise in the ballpark whenever the Jays play the Mariners. There's the Mariners eliminating the Jays in the playoffs a couple of years ago.
Smoking cigars at the Rogers Center.
Teoscar Hernandez last. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. Yeah. But yeah, it's good clean fun. It's good clean fun.
I don't know how clean it is, but it's fun.
It's good clean fun.
I mean, he's basically saying that nobody ever likes John. There ain't one person that likes John.
That's not what he said.
He said there are guys
who have beef with him.
Okay. I mean, it's just asking the field people who don't like John.
If you're gonna insult somebody, you should at least do it with correct grammar. The Jays have today's off. They will open guaranteed win weekend tomorrow with the first of three games against the Colorado Rockies.
What are you going to say if they lose two out of three? They ain't going to get swept.
They're not going to lose two out of three.
Rocky's been hitting a bunch of homers and dudes on base.
They're not going to lose two out of three.
You know who gives up the most homers in baseball through 13 games?
I know, the Jays. They're not going to lose to the Rockies. The Jays have today off if you want. Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess if you want to pay attention to it. Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson are scheduled to pitch today at Triple-A Buffalo.
I'll be paying attention.
Alec Manoah gets a start Saturday. Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson cannot get here fast enough.
It will help, for sure.
It will help. My guess is with no issue, no setback, we'll probably see them. They've got to be here before the Yankees come into town on Monday. They just have to. Danny Jansen. Grand slam yesterday, DHing. He is working his way back. So let's, and we've got, oh, I wanted to mention this. We've got a really good show today. Dr. James Andrews is going to join us. If you have a favorite pitcher, chances are James Andrews cut open his elbow and replaced and did Tommy John surgery on him. We are going to talk to him about the spate of injuries we've seen in baseball. It's probably going to surprise you. The numbers really aren't that. This is kind of normal. The difference in terms of numbers, the difference is the identity of the pitchers being injured. So we'll talk to Dr. Andrews about that. And if you're the parent of a young pitcher or a young athlete, we're going to talk to Dr. Andrews about the impact on young high school age players. Yep. Of a lot of the
stuff.
What's
rock and hard place, right? It's how you make money. You know how you make money? You throw hard, you spin it a lot.
So we'll talk to Dr. Andrews about that. Jeff Passan joins us for his weekly look around Major League Baseball, and Rock Kubatka will join us. The Orioles
are best organization in the American League.
They are.
Are they?
Jackson Holliday yesterday.
Fair question.
They're good.
They're getting to be must watch. I think that's the best way you can say it. It's like you want to watch the guys that play every single day. Now the pitching is a little rocky. Like they got to iron some things out there, but other than that, boy, they got some things working. And you know the closer
Jackson Holliday looks like he should be serving. He should be a barista at Starbucks something like that, though.
Yeah,
he looks like he's 19 years old. He should be having a backpack
Professor.
And going to school.
Looks pretty good to me.
Yeah. He looks awfully good.
He does.
So let's revisit the loss to the Mariners yesterday because we'll focus on the bullpen. The Jays lost 6-1. They didn't get any hits. Vladdy got a big home run. You say Kikuchi was good, but the Jays didn't get a big hit when it counted in the ninth inning. The real question, I guess, surrounding that whole game is the bullpen. Cannot put it any other way. Tim Mazza and Mitch White gave it up. Now, we talked about this on Blue Jays Talk yesterday. Without Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson, and with Chad Green down and Trevor Richards down, really, John Schneider was left with a choice of three pitchers in that situation. Mitch White, we all saw what happened when he came in the game. Mitch White, Tim Mazza, and this is maybe the only grounds I think you can have for second-guessing John Schneider here is Yenesis Cabrera. So you've got Cabrera and Mazza, your two lefties. Both of them have worked in the same day. Their last outing was on the same day, pardon me. You know Mesa's velo's down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that says about Yenesis Cabrera. Now, he has not been really good to start the year. Is that the... If John Schneider had a redo, do you think he goes with Cabrera instead of Mesa in that situation?
No, I think he was hoping and praying that they score a run in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
I think exactly the way he wanted it to play out, it played out. He ran into a really good pitcher in Logan Gilbert who was locating and throwing a bazillion miles an hour and rarely missed with a secondary pitch. And it was a battle to, you know, string together some hits. One of your better hitters ran into a hanging slider, tied the game, and then it was trying to figure out how do you get it to the ninth inning, give your lineup a chance to walk it off. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. He's thinking to himself, I got three dudes down there in the bullpen I don't want to use. Two of them are left-handed, and one of them is Mitch White. How do I stay away from them three guys and win a baseball game against a really good pitching staff? He had it lined up and did exactly what he wanted to do.
Bases loaded.
Just Alejandro Kirk didn't get a hit, and you know,
Ernie Clement.
Yeah, hit the little bloops thing to right, and somebody made a good catch.
Exactly.
It was sort of how you play it out, how you think about what you're trying to do at the end of the game, and just so happens the issue that they've had, what are they, they're 21st in run scored. Like, it's sort of the same old thing, right? It's trying to get the big hit from the bottom of the order, and a lot of the times this year that's been hard to come by. But if you're John sitting over there, thinking to yourself, I got three guys I don't want to use. I got one guy who's been dominating everybody in Garcia. I can't abuse him and use him for three innings. I want to get him or use him to get us to the ninth inning with a tie game, giving the offense a chance to walk it off, because I don't want to go extras with a guy standing at second with either Tim Mazza or Cabrera or White pitching. Just so happens it didn't work out. I mean, that's nothing that John didn't do right. It's just they didn't get a hit when they wanted to get a hit.
What does it say to you about Yenesis Cabrera, though, that he is the only other lefty in that bullpen and at a time when Tim Mazza is really searching?
Yeah, I think
Yenesis Cabrera didn't get the call.
When we had a caller call in and say, why didn't you pinch hit Davis Schneider for Alejandro Kirk? Because Kirk is one of your boys, and you're going to rely on him to do a bunch of things offensively late in the game, and Davis Schneider is a role player and a bench player, and you're not going to do that this part of the season when one of your better hitters that you're relying on is coming up in a big spot to get a big-time hit. You just don't do that. Tim Mazza, I think, this time of the year is one of those guys. Cabrera, quite frankly, is not Tim Mazza. Like, he's gotten off to a slow start. Now, I'm sure if Cabrera was dominating, people hadn't given up a run and was getting a bunch of weak contact and striking out a bunch of people, might have been reversing that. That's not the case. So if I'm John, again, everybody yell and scream about that clubhouse thing and how important it is. This time of the year, you're trying to maneuver through a couple of things, right? Use your best guys. Use your experienced guys. Use the guys that you've been leaning on since you've been a manager, and also keep the clubhouse intact and want those guys to take steps forward and be the best guys they could possibly be. There's a fine line there. So for me anyway, John did exactly what he was supposed to do. He used the right guy at the right time in Jimmy Garcia to get them to the ninth inning to allow the offense to get a big hit. Just so happens they didn't get a big hit. And then when the guy came in that was supposed to try and get some outs, a better hitter at the time was better than the guy throwing on the mound. And sometimes that's just the way baseball works.
We do have to talk about Jimmy Garcia. We've talked about how, obviously, Jordan Romano's the closer on this team. But the Jays have always, for the past couple of years, you've kind of been left with the impression that they would like, there's a search for somebody else to shoulder some of the load.
Swiss Army knife.
To shoulder some of the load, though, off Jordan Romano, somebody you're not afraid to give the ball to in the ninth inning in a save situation. Now, we talked about Jimmy Garcia in spring training. His velocity was up noticeably. Yesterday, Kevin, 100, 99, 98. Looked really good. I don't know if I'd say it was necessarily effortless when he pitches, but he looked the part yesterday. He really looked the part.
His finish is free and easy.
Is this velo?
Is this velo sustainable in your mind? I think so. It sounds to me like in the offseason he found, you know, some things to do with his lower half. He's lifting more weights, heavier weights, to make his lower half stronger, to make it, you know, the pressure.
You saw him in spring training. Is he that noticeably bigger?
Not really. The velocity's there, and you know, the arm swing doesn't look like he's forcing it to create velocity and spin on the secondary stuff. That will tell you that the base, when he lifts his leg, is balanced over the rubber, and he's able to repeat delivery over and over and over again. And because he was a hard thrower anyway, it's just adding the extra tick because now he's stronger and more balanced and can lean on his lower half a little bit more and just allow his arm to be freer and easier and quicker out of the glove, out front, snapping it off. I do, for me anyway, looks like he's lowered his arm angle a little bit. That's why it's running a little bit more. I mean, it's not tremendously noticeable, but it does look like he's lowered it a little bit.
The pitch is running more. That is noticeable.
It absolutely is. And, you know, it could be grip, it could be arm slot, it could be a bunch of things. It's just, I think because he's made adjustments, lifting heavier weight with his lower half, he threw more bullpens in the offseason. The doctor on later, we'll ask him, is that how you overcome injuries? That's how you sustain, you know, velocity and spin, is you throw more, like, or you don't throw as much. So I think he's found the routine that's worked for him, that's helped him maintain this. I mean, he showed up in spring training. His first pitch was hard. Mm-hmm. The last one we saw yesterday was hard. Like, it seems to be working. So I think once they get a couple of guys back who can pitch the ninth and the eighth inning, now you can use him anywhere.
Right.
You can use him against a tough right-hander with the bases loaded and two outs. Bring him in and let him throw that bazillion and a different arm angle and the heavy movement, because he can do it. And he can sustain that by finding that routine, which helps him, and he's got tons of confidence. You can tell he's losing confidence. Boy, they push the button, and he's just gripping it and ripping it. And when you're like that, that will tell you that everything's working the way it's supposed to be working, and you're happy with it, and you can just go out and think about executing and don't throw this thing down the middle. That's all I want to do is, if I do everything mechanically right because I'm strong enough to repeat that now, the ball will end up where it's supposed to end up with tons of velocity and tons of spin, and there ain't too many humans can hit that.
No, and you know, again, looking back to yesterday, that was probably a game. Well, if Eric Swanson was here, either Eric Swanson would have been in that game or Eric Swanson would have appeared in one of the other games of the series, and you may have had Trevor Richards.
Well, the 10th inning would have probably looked different, too.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, it would have looked different. So we wait. We await the return of Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson. And you know, I think we're both on the same page here. There are things that I focus on with this team and worry about. The bullpen's not one of them, because Pete and John have always been able to figure it out. The front office generally, I mean, they've done a pretty good job of putting this bullpen together. You know, they've got the Adam Simbers or the Trevor Richards. They're very good at making in-season additions. So I don't worry about the bullpen.
Yeah, all of a sudden now they're seventh in quality starts in baseball with five. You know, Chris Bassett said it right. The starters do their job. All that bullpen stuff will take care of itself. Like now you'll see the best out of the bullpen because they'll be fresher. Yeah. You know, the ball will be coming out hotter. Like John won't have to worry about matching up as much because the velocity and the, you know, just the energy level that they will bring when you don't have to abuse them in parts of the season where, quite frankly, the starting rotation is not doing its job. And now all of a sudden it's starting to do that.
Starting to stabilize a bit.
But again, I think it's about roles. I mean, everybody says, well, do you need a set role? Do you need to tell a guy he's in the ninth inning? He's in the eighth inning. Mm-hmm. It helps. Like, it helps everybody, right? It helps Pete Walker. It helps John Snyder. Like, it helps everybody. It helps the guy throwing in the ninth. Helps the guy throwing in the eighth. And it also helps the guys that are trying to fill in the blanks to get it to the eighth and ninth inning. So, yeah, like everything will fall into place. They'll be a better team because of it. If they got the guys that are in those certain roles that they feel comfortable with and are experienced enough and used to, you know, not having their best stuff and getting through. Tim Mason throw 91 all year and be good?
No,
probably not. So that can Jordan Romano be down a tick and still be good? Absolutely, because he knows how to abuse the slider in the regular season. He knows how to do that. So, yes, you can't always teach experience, and they will be a much, much better team when those two guys get back.
Yusei Kikuchi yesterday, 6 innings, 3 hits, 9 Ks, 1 earned run, 2 walks, more efficient than we've seen him.
16 to 23 throwing strike one, that's huge. I mean, that was somewhere around the 50% mark. That ain't enough. He just, his secondary stuff, his changeup, his slider, his curveball ain't good enough. Be pitching from behind all the time. And I can cheat now. If he's behind, I can cheat, get the head out, and I'm going to start hitting the fastball a little bit harder. That's why you were seeing the average going into yesterday was 400 and slugging 600 on the fastball. But yesterday, the fastball, the four-seamer was in the zone 66% of the time. That's a ton, right? He's attack mode. Like, it's feeling good. It's coming off the fingers the way it's supposed to. He's throwing strike one, obviously, 16 out of 23. He had 4 punchies with the fastball. That's a lot for him. You know, out of the 9, he had 4 of the other 4 of those were sliders and 1 off the changeup. Like, it just makes the secondary stuff that much better. Because, again, we talk about this with Jimmy Garcia. When you refine your mechanics enough to where you don't have to think about it, you know, it was sort of like when he first got here, it was start it, stop it, start it again. Did I lift it high enough? Is it not too long? Is my hand going to get out quick enough? Like, you could actually see him thinking about it on the mound. Now it's just I pick it up, my foot's down on time, I catch it out front, the velocity's there, I can turn around and actually see 96 a lot of the times, which that 96 will give him a ton of confidence to throw the slider more. It'll have more break, it's spinning longer, you know, he's throwing it harder, which will mean it tunnels longer, harder to tell the difference between his fastball and his slider, and then it has that back foot break down and away from a lefty, down and into a righty. And then he can slow, change speeds, change eye levels. All of a sudden, now he's a pitcher and not a thrower, which is, you know, how do they do that, Jeff? Like, it's almost like, you know, you sort of look in the mirror and say, what I was doing ain't good enough. If I want to be a 6-inning guy and get paid, because this is his year, man, you know, right? He's going to have to sort of have a good year to get paid for next year. And I'll say this. You asked me this yesterday off air. Would you bring him back? This, you say? Absolutely. Like, this 96 left-handed don't grow on trees. And if he can continue to do things like this and throw the fastball in the zone more often, yeah, you're looking to have a conversation with him sooner than later.
Yeah. No, I listen, he's another guy that, you know, compared to what we may have thought of him in that first year, when you go back and look at what he was doing then and compare the Yusei Kikuchi then to now, and a lot of work has gone into this. A ton of work has gone into it. But when you see a game like yesterday, and you've always made the point, I mean, that fastball from a left-hander, it does not grow.
You just don't see it a lot.
Now, it doesn't grow.
Now, there is sometimes, like the Dylan Moore in the third inning when the leadoff hitter, he threw the 3-2 breaking ball because the dude can't hit a breaking ball. But you got to realize that your fastball is really, really good.
That's a classic thing, though, right? What do? You go with your strength or the hitter's weakness?
Well, you got to know that I got a really good fastball. Right. I'm locating that thing, and it's the bottom of the order. And
it turned out to hurt him because that was the one run that they got.
What if it's non-competitive and he doesn't swing at it? He gets on base, he steals it. They get a cheap RBI that way from the leadoff hitter after I threw him a good fastball. He jams himself. Like, it's just situations you don't have to put yourself in that I think he can sort of live from and not do it again and be better for it.
You probably know that number of elbow injuries for pitchers in Major League Baseball has become a talking point early in the season. Now, again, depending on who you speak to, it's either a crisis or it's just a repeat of what we've seen in recent years. The exception being some of the names now are bigger. And in the case of Yuri Perez, a 20-year-old guy who was sort of babied along the way so that this wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. Dr. James Andrews is, as I said, actually, if you were going to put together a Mount Rushmore of orthopedic specialists, a Mount Rushmore of doctors who have saved careers, well, Dr. James Andrews would very much be on it.
He has since retired, but he's become a spokesman for maintaining pitchers' health in the game, and particularly, and he's done this for a while, he's been a spokesman and a critic of how young pitchers and how kids are developed. James Andrews joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's tough. I think the game has changed a lot. I think it'd be easiest to hear and blame the pitch clock. I think in reality, you put everything together, and everything has a little bit of influence. I think the biggest thing is the style of pitching has changed so much. Everybody's throwing as hard as they possibly can, and spinning the ball as hard as they possibly can. And it's hard to deny those results. Obviously, It's a double-edged sword. How can you tell somebody to go out there and not do that when they're capable of throwing 100? And this young guy comes up and throws a pitch 95 and gives up a big homer, and everybody's like, "What the hell, man?" So something needs to change.
That is the pitcher's eye view. I guess it still is the pitcher's eye view of the rash of pitching injuries in Major League Baseball. That is Justin Verlander. From April the 7th. And, you look at the names, Shane Bieber, Spencer Strider, Framber Valdez, Gerrit Cole, not all of them having Tommy John surgery, but a lot of them shut down with elbow issues. Guys like Shohei Ohtani, Sandy Alcantara, Jacob deGrom, and Shane McClanahan, those are just some of the top pitchers in the game who had Tommy John surgery, or reconstructive surgery, I should say, last year as well. And it's odd because those are big names, and we just rush out and say there's a pitching crisis. But if you look at the raw numbers and folks like, the score, Travis Sochuk and other people have done studies in this. In terms of the raw numbers at the major league level, it's actually kind of on par compared to last year and the year before and the year before that. But look, there's no doubt that over the years, the number of Tommy John surgeries has increased dramatically. Dr. James Andrews, a longtime orthopedic specialist, I was only half joking when I said a little earlier that if your favorite pitcher underwent Tommy John surgery, there's a pretty good chance that Dr. James Andrews did it. We're very pleased that he joins us on Blair and Barker. Dr. Andrews, thank you so much for doing this. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Look, how much of the focus we're seeing right now on elbow injuries is due to the fact that there are more elbow injuries, or is it due to the fact that with all the controversy and the focus around the pitch clock, it's like people have kind of been looking, people are looking for an excuse here to almost turn this into a political thing?
I can't say anything about the pitch clock because I think everybody's sort of gotten beyond that. It's much deeper relative to the root cause of the elbow and the shoulder injuries than that. By the way, I was just looking up some of the statistics to tell you how critical this is. For example, of all the Major League Baseball pitchers that started spring training this year, 35% of them had already had a Tommy John's procedure. And for me, and I'll just preface my remarks real quick, the culprits are one of three things, basically. And the pitch clock is not one of them. Number one is too much velocity. Number two is too many pitches. And then if you add poor mechanics to those two things, then you've got a disaster. That's basically, from a sports medicine standpoint, how I see it.
Before we focus on the injuries at the major league level, one of the things it seems to me, again, from a distance, is that there's kind of two tracks here. There's pro pitchers who have elbow issues,
but something, or shoulder issues, something you've talked about a lot and something you've been very active in. It's also the high school kids that are going through this. Is there a one-size-fits-all approach to, I'm going to use the word, curing this, Dr. Andrews?
Well, you make a very good point. And I would add to that to say that the risk of pitching injuries in professional baseball is also related to the epidemic of injuries associated with the shoulder and elbow in youth baseball. If you look at and closely get a, when you have a major league pitcher come in to see you with, say, an elbow or a shoulder problem, if you take a real good history, sometimes they've forgotten about when they first started having trouble. But anywhere in my practice, statistically, anywhere from 50 to 60% of the major league pitchers that are having trouble, once you go in depth with them, and sometimes you have to ask their mother what happened to them when they were 12 or 13 years of age. And about 50 to 60% of them will then relate to an injury they had when they missed 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks or 6 weeks when they were young in youth baseball. And so the problem with coming out of high school is most of them nowadays are coming out of high school already being injured, and a lot of them have already had a high school Tommy John's procedure. So there's your real root cause is what's happening in youth baseball with showcases, multiple leagues, too many innings, trying to throw a match a radar gun when you're 15 years old at 90 miles per hour. Again, too much velocity. By the way, parents will spend umpteen jillions worth of dollars on their young baseball players to increase their velocity by certain situations that they pay for to be able to throw 90 miles per hour. The word amongst all these parents is, if you can't throw 90 miles per hour when you're in high school, you have no chance of playing up the ladder either for the college scholarship or getting drafted or to play professional baseball. So your real root problem begins in the youth leagues, and that's what I've been so passionate about since year 2000 when I started seeing the epidemic rise of injuries in youth baseball and youth sports in general, not just baseball. Baseball is the star of that particular problem, though.
Doc, you can understand with a young person wanting to figure out how to throw hard, how to spin it, because, you know, you're trying to make money. That's just the way baseball is nowadays. If you had to give advice to a professional baseball player that you've worked on, is there something you would tell them? Would it be lift more weights with your lower half? Would it be throw more bullpens? Would it be long toss more? Your chances of lasting longer and not seeing me again would be better off doing what?
Trying to learn how to throw strikes. Go back to what Hank Aaron taught us all when he was the director of the minor league organization for the Atlanta Braves. And he brought along those pitchers that you remember that were so good because they knew how to throw strikes and they knew how to place the baseball and they knew how to change their velocities up. And they did not try to throw as hard as they could throw on every throw. So with kids in high school and younger, number one, I try to tell them to stay away from showcases and outlaw. I've said for how many years now, 20, that the radar gun should be outlawed in high school and younger age groups in baseball and youth baseball. It's done nothing but create all these problems for us. The dads all have their own radar gun now. And the first thing a kid will tell you when he comes in with an injury is how hard they can throw. They have no idea when they tell me that's the root cause for their problem. And they're completely unashamed of it. And the parents are bragging about how hard they can throw, and yet they're in there with the Tommy John's injury.
I read.
Let me tell you
little
something else that might cap off what I'm saying. Dr. Fleisting, who's the head of our biomechanics baseball lab here in Birmingham, we did a study on the tensile properties associated with a Tommy John's ligament. And we found out that the red line for that ligament, meaning where it would begin to break when you're in high school. It will begin to redline at about 80 miles per hour.
Wow.
It nears its peak at 85 miles per hour. And at 90 miles per hour, it can go any time. It can go with fatigue, with the too many pitches, too many innings, et cetera. The only way you get away with it at 90 miles per hour in high school is from a genetic situation. And that means their daddy was a major league pitcher and they were born with a ligament that's already more developed. By the way, baseball is a developmental sport. That's the thing we all forget about. Yeah, developmental sport means that you get better at it all the way up to a certain age. And the ligament gets stronger during that development. So you have to pitch to develop it, but it gets stronger up to about age 26. It's certainly not ready to throw 90 miles per hour in high school. That's why all these high school kids are getting hurt.
You know, hearing you talk, I was lucky enough to cover Pedro Martinez when he was with the Montreal Expos. And, you know, Pedro always used to say, we used to talk to him about his pitch. He said, well, I'm from the Dominican Republic. All I do is I throw. Is that just something, and you hear that from a lot sure. of pitchers from Caribbean countries, right?
Absolutely.
Guys we talk to. Hey, I just throw. But yet you're talking about workload and innings as being an issue. Is there a difference between throwing and pitching in a competitive game?
Oh, there's always a difference. When we step people up following an injury and we start them off with what we call active rest, where they're just doing exercises, getting their motion and soreness out, and then we start them throwing short distances, and we bring them out gradually, step by step. And let's say they've thrown simulated games, they've thrown batting practice simulated games, and even if they've done that and you move them into a competitive mode, that's a different level.
Mm.
They throw at a different level, a more intensity when they're actually playing competitively than what you could ever get them to do with getting them ready in a simulated game. So there's always that step when you first come back competitively, and you have to really pitch count them because it's a different level of stress.
Doc, is there a difference between a split finger, a curveball, a changeup when it comes to stress on any part of your arm that maybe if you don't throw one of those three pitches as much, you may have a chance of lasting longer without seeing you?
Well, the whole answer to your question, regardless of what pitch they're throwing, is the mechanics. And, you know, we have some studies that we did with Glenn Fleissing about the curveball in youth leagues, and we found out if they throw a curveball at a young age, which, you know, we always say you shouldn't, even now we say they shouldn't throw until they have shaved, which means they've reached skeletal maturity. But if you throw it even at a younger age with good mechanics, it's no difference stress on your elbow or shoulder as compared to throwing a fastball. Now, it's always been known that throwing a changeup was a relief pitch. It allowed your arm to have a little bit of a rest and also tricked the batter, particularly in the youth leagues, to swing at something that was coming at a different speed than a fastball. The problem we're seeing now, though, in Major League Baseball is they're throwing what we call a Major League changeup or a hard changeup, which is only 2, 3, 4 miles per hour different than the 100-mile-per-hour fastball. So now we're seeing players coming in the professional ranks that are throwing a hard changeup and they're tearing their ligament doing that. It's all, again, associated with the need for velocity.
What goes through your mind, Dr. Andrews, when you hear a pitcher, a fairly established pitcher, say, I'm working on a new pitch. I want to add a new pitch to my arsenal. I've gone to whatever drive line, whatever it is in the off season. And I was thinking of Spencer Strider throwing a curve. What goes through your mind when you hear that, though, when you've got somebody, quote unquote, working on a new pitch?
They need to have a sit down and deep talking to, and their parents need to be talked to, too. But let me tell you what, that's like butting your head against the wall to try to talk them out of what their ideas are.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst thing that happens when they come in and tell me that their pitching coach and they just got into college is working on changing their mechanics up. Now, what does that mean? If they had a good pitching coach, it might mean great, good thing. But who knows? But yeah. Most of the time when they start trying to work on a separate pitch, that's more intensity, more workload, and it's associated with an injury. So to do that, you've got to really be careful how you do it so that you are not increasing your injury rate. To me, that's a red flag. So I'd be careful with that.
Doc, how does Major League Baseball help this? You know, they've sort of limited rosters. You know, there's less pitchers on rosters. The mound visits.
Fewer minor league jobs available.
Absolutely. You said the pitch clock had nothing to do with that. I'll take your word for that. How does Major League Baseball help this? How do they keep from the stars of baseball hurting themselves?
Well, the big thing was that it's what we've done in youth baseball to try to prevent the injury, the root cause of these injuries that may not show themselves until later on in their careers. And the first thing we did was I was on the board of the Little League International, and we started the pitch count rules. And we did that based on pretty much what we all knew was going on. I set those pitch rules myself, and the way I did it is I called 20 of my peers that were involved in youth baseball, and I asked them about how many innings should you be able to or how many pitches could you pitch at different ages. And that's how we developed the pitch count rules for youth baseball. From there, it went on up. You know, we had some 25 youth organizations back in those days playing youth baseball. And from that, it gradually worked its way into where all of the different youth leagues had to adopt those pitch count rules just from pressure of injuries. And from that also, USA Baseball got involved, and I was on their board. And, you know, they're the governing body of all youth baseball, so they helped push it. But we still didn't have any help from Major League Baseball. And the way we got that resolved was we tried to tell Major League Baseball directly, I was on the research committee and still am for Major League Baseball, that if they didn't get involved at the youth level with their research and education aspects, they wouldn't have anybody to draft out of high school that hadn't already had a Tommy John's procedure. So that got their attention. And we knew that if we could get Major League Baseball involved at the youth level, particularly with some of the stars of Major League Baseball pitchers, televised baseball games with them talking about controlling the pitch count for kids at home. If we could get them involved, maybe the parents would listen. So Major League Baseball stepped up, and this was 5 or 6 years ago, in what we call the Pitch Smart program. And that program adopted all of the pitch count rules that we now use in youth leagues, and also we got it passed in the National High School Athletic Association for high school baseball. And the problem is everybody's learned how to cheat and get around some of the rules, so that's a whole other problem. But Major League Baseball has finally really started figuring out how to keep the game safety and healthy and prevent all these injuries that they're now seeing. So my hat's off to our commissioner and to Major League Baseball. In fact, they've got a study going on right now of how to prevent injuries in professional baseball that we're all talking about. Mm. So my hat's off to them.
Dr. Andrews, why did it take so long for baseball to commission this study? Because it's something, you know, I've talked to managers about it, and it just seemed to me that it would have been something that should have been done a long time ago.
Good question. You know, when I say it's a good question, that means I'm not quite sure how to answer it. Baseball has such a tradition. And I think part of the thing is that they look back and say, well, in the old-timer pitchers, they had a lot harder and more extensive workload, and they didn't, and they pitched 250, 300 innings in a year, and a lot of full games, nine inning games, and this, that, and the other. So it was hard to change. It was hard to finally realize from a scientific standpoint what was really going on out there. Now there are enough statistics that the Major League Baseball powers to be understand what's happening. The only thing they don't understand is that they're pushing velocity and throw as hard as you can throw on every pitch. So hopefully things like you're doing today in this particular podcast will get their attention. And I think Major League Baseball, from a commissioner standpoint, they certainly understand that there's got to be some changes because the effect that it's having on baseball is monumental. Besides that, it's costing them a lot of money from the injury situation.
Yeah, comes back to that, doesn't it? Yep. Dr. Andrews, listen, thanks for doing this. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. Enjoy your retirement. I'm sure you're still going to be active with this cause. And again, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Great stuff.
Well, I'm not going to give up on it.
Good stuff. Thank you,
awesome.
Sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank y'all.
Dr. James Andrews. And if you're a parent, that's, you know, it's funny because we were talking when we knew we were going to have Dr. Andrews on before, Kevin and I were talking about, you know, one of the things that's also a talking point here is, you know, guys just don't play guys. I shouldn't say that. Kids just don't play as many sports as used to. People tend to specialize now. And you were talking about, like, you were a big man on campus in your high school. Mm-hmm. You played football. You played baseball.
Yeah.
You ran cross country.
Yeah. Track.
Track. Yeah. And you played
basketball. Yeah.
And you were a pitcher, actually. I keep forgetting this. You were given a full ride to Virginia Tech as a pitcher.
I was. I only pitched one inning because they could see how I could hit. But, yeah, it's interesting listening to him talk because I just don't know if you're a parent and you're trying to tell your kid, don't do it this way and still try and make money at it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Right now, there's just no money in it. If you're throwing 89 to 91 miles an hour. I mean, we're talking about Tim Mason throwing 91. It's not good enough.
Yeah.
Like, it ain't going to work.
Yes.
Like, I just don't know how, as a parent, you'd sell that to your kid because the investment that your kid has to make, I know that I made when I was a young kid, everything that goes into the practice and the travel and just the hours that you have to put in a day to be as good as you can possibly be, and then you're trying to tell your kid, oh, by the way, don't do it this hard or try and throw it and have it break this much because you're not going to last very long. Well, hey, mom and dad, everybody else does it and they're making tons of money. How would I not do it and still make tons of money? It's an impossible sale. And then you see Major League Baseball, right, have the three batter rule and the, you know, only the 13 pitchers on a team. Basically, they're telling you they don't give a crap. Well, I mean, that's basically what they're telling you. The product's better when you're throwing a bazillion miles an hour and striking a bunch of people out. Yeah. It's just better. And it's easier for these teams to spend less money to have you go in the offseason and try and figure out how to throw a bazillion because they don't have to show you how to do it. So I just don't know how you sell it. That's the thing, right, is how do you sell it to people trying to make money at it?
You've got to – Dr. Andrews is right. You've got to start at the level of kids, the high school level. I'm just really – and I'm not – I'm just kind of skeptical about that. I'm not saying – I'm saying he's absolutely right. And, you know, Godspeed, I hope it gets done. But, you know, parents as well as I do now, we all know parents of kids who've been great athletes. There's, you know, part of it as a parent as well. If you think your kid's got a chance, there's nothing.
Yeah,
there's nothing you won't do.
And you see these dudes at the big league level doing it, and you want to be like them.
And you see Spencer Strider learning a new pitch.
Like looks in his lower half. His mechanics look sound, and then he gets hurt. So how can I compete with that?
Rock Kubutka will join us next. We'll talk a little Jackson Holiday, Jeff Passan as well. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And the 2-1. Oh, that one is drilled out toward deep left center field. You can forget about that one. Touch them all, Geno. A grand slam, and the Bisons will take the lead here in the fourth. That ball jumped off his bat.
108.2 over the old configuration. To the back wall, Jansen left, no doubt. And once again on rehab, Danny Jansen homers. It's automatic.
That was Pat Malacaro with the call. As the Danny Jansen hitting a grand slam for the Buffalo Bisons last night. I think he also had a double as well. And yeah, if there was a fantasy league for rehabbing dudes, Danny Jansen would be a top choice. Now, he's also had a lot of rehab games, unfortunately.
He has. But what if you're the pitcher that's giving those up to big leaguers? It's almost not fair, isn't it? Sort of. I often thought about that whenever I was in the minor leagues and there was rehab guys coming down. And most of them were pitchers a lot of the times, mm-hmm. were the ones that were rehabbing and were nasty and throwing nasty stuff and punching me out. It really shouldn't really count on my stats, should it? I didn't really like that.
The good thing, though, is when guys come down to rehab, you get good dinners, right? Because the rehabbing dudes generally, they ante up for the minor leaguers to get a good feed in the clubhouse.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it's, some guys will get off their wallets and it's steak, and then there's others that not so much.
It's bad form to not do it. Most of the guys I would think would do it.
It's just the restaurant they're doing it at, right? It's the,
Yeah.
It's the Applebee's or the
Outback.
Outback.
Steak. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to, because that's a lot of dudes, right? It's coaches and everybody.
Yeah.
So it's,
everybody gets
that's
it.
Quite a bit. And it's an individual plate. So the price goes up.
Don't be afraid, dude. That wallet open one time. Okay. Oh,
facts.
It's facts.
Yeah.
Hey, right here in my hot little hands.
Uh oh. Free tickets.
Free tickets.
Free tickets.
We're giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here on Blair and Barker, whether you listen on the radio or on our podcast. This is, a great question. I would have got it, but I would have had to think about it.
Mm.
All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Rockies this weekend at the Rogers Center. Guaranteed win weekend, as we're calling it.
No, not we. I won't go down that rabbit hole.
The Blue Jays acquired star Rocky shortstop.
You want to start over?
Yeah. The Rockies acquired. The Blue Jays acquired star Rocky shortstop Troy Tulowitzki in 2015. Who is the only player involved in that trade who participated in last season's World Series?
Wow. The pitcher?
I'm just saying. Text the answer to 590-590. I'm not going to give it away. Text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. You can see rules at sportsnet.ca/590. Again, this is for a chance to win tickets to see the Jays and Rockies in guaranteed win weekend at the Rogers Center, April 13th and 14th. The Blue Jays acquired star Rocky shortstop Troy Tulowitzki in 2015, who was the only player involved in that trade to participate in last season's World Series. 590-590. Text it for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. Did you watch Jackson Holliday?
I did.
Yesterday?
Yeah. I think he looked exactly the way he was supposed to look. He got a little excited early. More at bats he had, the more plays he was involved in. He got on base one time. He got to run the bases. Like, that's a big deal. You got to get on base. It's not always about getting your first hit. It's just about getting on base, and everything's bigger at the big league level, right? It's louder there. You're doing it against the Red Sox. So, yeah, I think that's, you got a bunch of youth around you, too, that's been there and done it and not too far removed from doing it, their first time. So you could sort of lean on that, just have a little fun. And then they made it a little comeback, down 5-0. Like, it's just sort of, if you're not a fan of the Orioles, you just, it's like, I got to deal with that the next 10 or 15 years. It's because they're going to be a handful.
I thought it was interesting watching the game, the post-game interview with Jordan Westberg, who, for all the hype about Jackson Holliday, Jordan Westberg had a really good game. And they were talking to him about what advice he had given,
what advice he had given Jackson Holliday, and he was saying it was either him or it might have been Colton Cowser, said the one thing they told him is breathe.
Yeah, and I saw his breathe. Dad. I saw his dad leaned up against the batting cage too. I mean, no pressure. Don't be afraid, Dad, to not show up. I think he was at batting practice. I think that's where I saw him.
His dad knows a little bit about hitting.
I know, but no pressure. But yeah, I'm just right here standing watching you take batting practice.
Rock Kabatko covers the Orioles for Mass, and he joins us on Blair and Barker. Rock, thanks so much for joining us today. Well, Jackson Holliday is up. I guess there's still like 13 guys down at Norfolk that we're going to see at some point this year. What are expectations? You know, like I saw immediately when he came up, everybody saying, okay, this guy's going to be playing second base every day for the Orioles from now until, you know, probably, well, hopefully for another decade or so. Realistically, what are the Orioles' expectations for him in terms of production?
Yeah, first of all, I want to see how Michael Lice makes room for all those pieces down in Norfolk. Yeah. By the way, I think it's still a 26-man roster, right?
So no, don't be afraid to send some up here.
It was funny. One of the Boston writers is like, you know, we don't have any shortstops, and you've got like three of them at least, because Westberg is a shortstop. He just never gets to play it. But, it was interesting that they had all this flexibility and mobility with their infielders, and suddenly it does look more like it's a set infield. And Brandon Hott asked him about it. He's like, you know, you already said Gunnar Henderson is the everyday shortstop, and Jackson Holliday is only going to play short or second, so that puts him at second. That puts Jordan Westberg at third because you guys said you want him in a lineup pretty much every day to give him a real extended look. So it looks like you're set at three positions, and first base, of course, is Ryan Mountcastle or Ryan O'Hearn. So it really looks like they're mainly set now. And then you've got Ramon Urias, who, by the way, won a gold glove at third 2 years ago. Right. And Jorge Mateo, who doesn't play third. He's shortstop second and blocked in both of those. And he was a Fielding Bible Award winner short a couple years ago. So they were playing him some in the outfield in spring training. And eventually you figure, you know, if you have to make room, let's say, for a Kobe Mayo in AAA or a Connor Norby or someone like that, you may have to end up moving one of those guys. So, it's a pleasant problem to have, but they're locked in at these positions now. And they've got other guys, and you don't know how they're going to be able to make room for them.
How does it look so far that they've handled expectations of winning? They're expected to win now every single time they go out there because they have more talent than most teams have. How does it look like they are handling that part of it?
Yeah, they don't seem to let that bother them. In fact, they'll just point to the fact that a lot of the experts out there are still picking the Yankees to win a division.
Yep.
And everybody's, you know, all the different sites that do, you know, the projections for wins and losses have regression, which I guess is understandable. They won 101 games. If you win 99, that's regression, I guess, technically, by definition. So they use that as like, see, people still aren't convinced, and we didn't pay attention when they didn't pick us to do anything. We're not going to pay attention if they do pick us to win. They just go about their business every day and don't let it bother them. They, you know, the cliched and kind of boring, we only control what we can control, and we don't care what anybody else says. And then they find it amusing later when, you know, Pacoda or whatever, like, way off on them, which seems to be the case every year. They weren't supposed to finish above 500 2 years ago. They won 83 games. Sure as heck, we're supposed to have the best record in American League, winning the division last year, did that. So, you know, we'll see. But even if there's a little bit of regression, which, again, happens when you win 101 games, they still have a very good chance to be in the postseason, and they're just not paying attention to any of the outside noise. They do a pretty good job of blocking that out, good or bad.
Absolutely. Is there a name on this team that nobody talks about that you think needs to step up to help them go where they want to go?
You know, I've been kidding Danny Kulo, the lefty reliever, who they got from the Twins like the last day of spring training last year. I said, I'm all over your all-star campaign. I keep saying future all-star Danny Kulo. He's one of the most dominant lefties in baseball. How many people even know how to pronounce that last name? I didn't when they got him last year. He'd ask me, go ahead, and I'd say it. And he goes, Rock, you're really close. It took a while. And he has just been untouchable. He struck out the side his last outing in Pittsburgh. You got to have a bases loaded, no out jam. And again, nobody's talking about this guy. And he's really key right now. And with on the days that Craig Kimbrel isn't available to close, Yennier Cano, you know, had the blown save the other day in Pittsburgh, and he'll get his opportunities. But he much prefers that setup role. He was an all-star in that role, and he basically said he was glad Kimbrel was here. I'm not a closer. But Cologne could be that guy who is kind of the backup closer and also that, you know, important lefty setup guy. And again, I don't think any people not really talking about it, but check his numbers, and they are eye-popping. It just makes you wonder, why wasn't he better in Minnesota? Because he had a really good year with the Orioles last year. I don't know if that's a credit, again, to their pitching program that they have, but they have really gotten the best out of him.
Rock, do you get a sense that the Orioles think they may have dodged a bullet with Kyle Bradish? Now, I know that he's apparently going to start his rehab assignment. Yeah. He has it is a UCL sprain. Do you think that they caught it, or they think they caught it in time that he may not need Tommy John surgery?
I mean, that is definitely how they've been talking about it since day one, that he got the platelet-rich plasma injection that I'd never heard of until I think Zach Britton got it years ago for the Orioles, and we started learning about it. But they've said all along they think he'd be back in the first half of the season. At one point, they said early in the first half, he's had no setbacks as far as the throwing progression, whether it was, you know, playing catch on flat ground, extending the distance, you know, pitching off a mound, bullpen sessions in Sarasota, facing live hitters. He was going to have his first rehab start today in Aberdeen, and because of the weather, they canceled that. They just had him throwing live BP. But the fact he's doing all these things means it's progressing in the right way. But then they'll tell you, you know, tap the brakes a little bit. It's still a day-to-day, how do you feel today? How's he feel tomorrow? How's the arm going to respond? And you just keep going from there. So they seem that cautiously optimistic that, you know, they're certainly stating we expect him and John Means to be in our rotation in the first half. But they also know if you hear sprain and UCL, it's always cringy. But so far, so good. And they'll take that. No setbacks.
Rock, we all know that a good manager's job starts in the sixth inning, right? It's how you work the bullpen. But Brandon Hyde, I don't think a ton of managers have youth with as much talent as he does with the everyday guys. What's his role in all this?
Yeah, I mean, he says, like, you know, look, we have so much young talent here. But then he says, but we are young. Like, he always reminds people. And that's kind of the trade-off. You bring up Jackson Holliday. That's a huge talent boost, and now you're even more inexperienced than you were before. And that's with Jordan Westberg, who hasn't played a full year in the majors yet. You know, Gunnar was Rookie of the Year last year, still a young kid. And, you know, guys were talking about that could come up from AAA at some point. And Colton Cowser right now seems to be in a platoon with Austin Hayes, where he's going to play the outfield against right-handers. And this is a guy that hasn't played a full season. He made his debut last year, July 5th in New York. He actually was sent down twice, but then had a great spring, made the club, is off to a really good start. So there is that youth, that inexperience, but it also is a lot of talent and a lot of energy. So I just think, you know, he handles it well, where he's trying not to put too much pressure on these guys, but you got to respect the talent. You put them in the lineup and you see how it goes. And, you know, they're a very loose but confident bunch, and you've got enough veterans kind of sprinkled in to help out if they need it. But it's a mature group. I mean, Jackson Holliday doesn't come across like a kid who needs a lot of mentoring. And he turned 20 in December. I guess Matt Holliday has a lot to do with that. But, yes, a very talented but mature family. He's a very composed kid in these interviews. There must have been 100 people crammed in that Fenway Park dugout yesterday. He just smiles and answers every question and makes eye contact with you for at least half of the answer. And you know, it's very mature. Now, you want to talk about pressure. His younger brother, Ethan, who is also behind the cage of batting practice, high school kid, there are people that say he's better than Jackson. Wow. So how would you like to be Ethan and be like, come on, man, he was a 1-1 who's a top prospect in baseball, and I'm in high school. Don't do that to me. But there are people that think he's going to be better than Jackson. Wow. That's pressure right there.
Absolutely. I was going to say, yeah, absolutely no pressure at all. Just, you know, and especially now given the focus on prospects, and, you know, it's so easy now to follow a guy's career online right up to his major league debut, that if you're a if you're a sibling, that's got to be tough.
Yeah, I was talking to Cal Ripken about this earlier, and I was like, you knew the pressure of being, you know, that name, the Ripken name, local high draft pick. But I said, but at least you weren't around the social media era when nobody was tweeting every single thing you did in the minors and the majors.
Yeah.
That really intensifies that spotlight.
With all these young kids and new ownership, Brock, is there pressure on David Rubenstein to get a couple of these young kids locked up long term?
I mean, he's certainly going to be asked about it, and I think so. To me, I mean, again, it's not my money. I don't have billions stashed away. I'm going to just go on the record right now and tell you that. And I probably would have gambled it all away if I did.
Yeah, but you probably would have.
Money,
you probably would have, knowing you, yes.
I definitely would think, spend it on my own guys first if their agents, the players, are willing to do that. And you can just automatically target Holiday, Rutschman, Henderson. And he has been asked about that, and he always says, I'm going to leave the baseball side to the best GM in baseball, Mike Elias. But the bottom line is he's the one signing those checks. So I certainly think that he believes in the importance of that as well. It's just a question of, you know, at what cost,
yep.
And are the, what's the other side say about it? I mean, he's so new into this role now that it's probably a little early to really, it definitely is too early to get a feel for exactly what's going to happen. I think a lot of fans thought that as soon as the ink dried when he signed the papers, that he was suddenly just going to be throwing money all over the place with, you know, a dollar bill sticking out of his pocket. He's not necessarily making it rain quite mm-hmm. yet. So we don't really know. We just make the assumption. He's got billions. He's going to spend a lot on the team. But it's all just assumptions right now. We have no way of knowing what he's going to do yet. But that would certainly be, to me, the first place that you would start.
Rock, which one of these veteran guys do you think needs to have the better year? Anthony Santander or Cedric Mullins?
Well, Santander is approaching his free agent year. So
yep.
If you look at it from that way, it would benefit him a lot more going into free agency to have that big year, because this is a guy the Orioles love. And I still feel like he's a little underrated with the, you know, what he, the production from both sides of the plate, his defense. He was a Gold Glove finalist in 2020 and has looked really good this year. He worked a lot on his mobility with a trainer they'd hired a couple of years ago. But I don't know if the Orioles are going to necessarily try to retain him, because they've got Heston Kjerstad along with Cowan that come up, and Kyle Stowers down below. They've got all these young outfielders. There may not be a spot, but it certainly would benefit him then going into free agency, being on the open market. If he puts up the kind of numbers, even like he did last year or the last few years, that would help out a lot.
Rock, we're going to let you run, man.
Yep.
Thanks for doing this. Should be a lot of fun this year. Enjoy it.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Rock Abatko covers the Orioles for Masson. They're going to have a lot of fun with that team. Anthony
yeah.
Santander is a free agent.
How about them Jays, boy? Like, switch hitting, got power.
No.
I mean, sometimes it makes too much sense, don't it? he's impactful in the middle of the order. He can hit around dudes. He's a switch hitter. He's really good left-handed. He's got power to both sides.
He loves hitting in this park.
Like, it's just, it makes a ton of sense. I mean, I'm assuming it would be a lot determined on how much he'd cost, but he can't cost that much. I mean, it would make sense for Ross to pick up the phone and go, hey, what would it take to get you here? You'd look real good hitting third for the Blue Jays.
This is the thing about the Orioles, that when we talk about their young players, then you look at the roster and you see guys like Mountcastle,
mm-hmm.
or this guy. Or Jorge Mateo. I mean, they've got guys. They got guys you could move to.
Yeah, Cedric Mullins is one of those guys too.
They've got guys you could move that would, I would think, would bring some pretty good pitching in return if you wanted to go that route.
Well, Cedric Mullins can steal a base. I mean, he's coming off a bad year. He's got something to prove. That's why I mentioned his name. Like, there's some incentive there for a player, right, to have a really good season. And he's sort of forgotten all that talent and that youth around him. You know, you come in and you have a good year, and that you there's could be some, you know, some want from other teams. So it bodes well. I just that gives more incentive to veteran guys to sort of don't forget about me, and that will make your team better.
I got an interesting question for you as someone who was a top prospect in an organization, felt the pressure when the Brewers brought you
absolutely
to the major league level.
Couldn't breathe.
What would you tell Brandon Hyde about dealing with all those young guys? Now, listen, not everybody's wired the same. I get that. But you made the point that is a really, like, top to bottom, that's a young team. And in another year, they're going to be even younger. What what does Brandon Hyde have to do to get the best he can get out of those young guys?
Yeah, I think it's hard sometimes to stay out of the way. I think that's the best piece of advice anybody could give anybody that's with the Orioles that is around that team on an everyday basis and is making decisions, right? They're very talented. It's all about the experience. You can't teach experience, right? And they're trying to win at the same time. Sometimes you just got to get out of the way, right? It's when you start opening your mouth to invite change. you know, say some of these guys get off to slow starts, it's going to happen, right? It's a round thing with a round thing. Sometimes you're gonna have some issues laying off the breaking ball. You're going to get, you know, excited when you're 0 for 10. How do you make up for that? I've never done that before. I've never been 0 for 10. How do I deal with it? Do you have a two-strike approach? And when will they be, you know, sort of called in the office and said some change needs to be made here? And I just think they need to get out of the way, right? The talent sometimes just will make up for woes. And I know when I was young, some dudes that were making decisions with the Brewers wanted to sort of stamp their name on me.
Put their mark on you.
It ain't going to be no different with the Orioles. Like, you're going to, you know, you're going to want, if you're one of the coaches, say that when he struggles, he's going to come to me. Like, I'm the guru. I know how to fix that. You sort of want to put your name behind that sort of kind of player. And you just sort of sometimes need to take a step back and just see how their talent plays out. That would be the advice. Nobody's ever really, you know, went through something like this.
Right.
Because this has taken the Orioles a while to become this Orioles team. And now it's just up to that coaching staff in that front office to sometimes just get out of the way.
Do you think that
that's not easy.
No,
it is not.
It's not. Even with the veteran team.
You met coaches. It's not. And there's khakis running all over the place. He's got Orioles got khakis. Like, yeah.
They got khakis coming out of their
yin-yang. They want a stamp, too, so it's not
the
easy
khaki
thing.
In charge of the team.
No question.
Do you think the fact that there is a guy like Adley Rutschman in that team who's been there for a couple of years now, is still young? I mean, he probably plays the same damn video games that these guys play. Do you think that helps having an established young star from within your organization?
I think it's a catcher.
Who can maybe be the, you know, maybe Brandon Hyde can go to Adley and say, hey, can you maybe talk to...
I don't think it'll be that. He's not a coach. I don't think that's a lot to ask. You got your coach. You do the coaching.
Okay.
I think it's if I'm a player and I'm his buddy and he's already been through this, I would say, how would you throw me? Like, if I was struggling, how would you? There you go. Yeah. How would you throw me? Like, what? How would you set me up? You know, what would you throw me with two strikes? And that would give you the edge when you go into these at bats, because he's faced the pitchers already in the American League East, and he knows where the ball don't fly in certain ballparks in the American League East. So he can tell you, don't look for this area, because the ball, if you hit it there, ain't going to go where you want it to go. Don't even look there. Like, he can give them a little edge before they actually walk to the plate. So absolutely, that coaching part of it, the coaches coach, players play. Leave it at that, right? Don't try and mesh the two together just because, you know, he's got a little bit more experience than another guy.
I think Adley's the guy they have to lock up first, don't you?
I mean, I think you care a little bit more about the locking up part than I do. They're going to get their money. Would the Blue Jays be any better if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was making $45 million a year?
I don't know. Would he be more productive? I don't know. I'm just asking. I would think maybe in the case of Adley Rutschman, it's a little different because he is a catcher. He does play every day. I mean, yeah.
I would think if you're a businessman or a woman and you don't have to, it's probably a reason why you're loaded and have tons of money and are real good at making money, is sometimes when you don't have to, you probably don't want to. And I think they got a lot of guys to pay. Like, who do you pay and who you don't pay? Well, probably more importantly, who do you not pay?
That's a great point. I mean, you do get to that.
Because one of the players is going to be chapped, not getting paid. I'm assuming Vladdy's chapped. Bo got paid, Vladdy didn't. I'm sure Vladdy's chapped. He don't like that. Like, I know he's making a little money in arbitration, and, you know, he won
but
his
he had
arbitration.
To beg for
but
it, basically.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it ain't no 2 or 3 year deal. Yeah. It's a 1 year deal, kind of.
And it's like anything else. You know, we had David Sampson was on when these two came up at the same time. And you do have to be careful because the first deal you sign, that kind of sets the template. That's the baseline expectations for another guy. Even though, you know, Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson play different positions, and there's a little bit of a gap in terms of experience, if Adley Rutschman signs a 6 or 7 year deal, I mean, Gunnar Henderson's going to probably look at that as some sort of signpost or guidepost. And then if Gunnar Henderson does that, Jackson Holliday's probably going to do it. And then the next kid to come up is going to do it. So it really... And there's the whole thing about, regardless of how wealthy the owner is, like the New York Yankees are showing us that there is an amount you won't go over. And, man, you got to be careful that
it doesn't all come together at the same time. And now in you're in a position 3 or 4 years down the road where these guys are so good, your payroll's way out of whack. Yeah. And now you got to...
They have multiple aircraft carriers. If you pay one aircraft carrier more than the other one, the one that's not getting paid as much ain't going to like you. That's life. It's a trickle-down effect. If I make more money, it makes me feel like I'm the best player on this team. How do you know that? That's the thing, right? I mean, they got 3 or 4 of them now. Like, it's like you... So it will be intriguing going forward because, look, I don't buy into the clubhouse thing as much as most people because I've been in a bunch of them, and, you know, it's very pocketed.
It's individual.
It's very pocketed.
Yeah.
Like, you got 2 or 3 in each pocket. Yeah. Like, it's not everybody coming together and having... you know, parties and dinners. That's just not the way the world works. But I will say, when one youngin's getting paid more than the other youngin that thinks he's just as good a player as that other one, how do you deal with that, right? It's then you start not liking that player, and it ain't that player's fault that the organization's paying him more. So I'm not saying it's going to turn into a thing, but it could. And it's up to the ownership to maybe have conversations with everybody involved and, you know, make it more of a family atmosphere than sort of a business atmosphere. And I just don't know how rich people do that. Do you? You've been around more rich people than I have. I've been around rich baseball players. That's different. You know, a rich baseball player just says, I want a boat, AJ Burnett. I'm going to go buy a boat. I'm like, we just left the field. He's like, I'm bored. I want to go buy a boat. I'm like, okay, I'll go with you.
Why am I not surprised?
It was awesome. And we were pulling away from a boat. I ain't going to tell you how much you paid. I didn't know debit cards would go that high. Will you tap it?
Yeah.
That's tremendous. It's great stuff. Like, it's just like that. It's just amazing how rich people think.
Yeah.
Well, rich people, I mean, rich people that own teams are not rich people, baseball players, but they're similar, right? In the way they think. It's just going to be intriguing. It's going to be something going forward that, you know, will be an intriguing thing to watch.
Jeff Passan is ESPN's MLB insider. He is one of our weekly regulars, and Jeff Passan will join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A reminder that every Friday, we go to the back leg line and solicit viewer and listener questions or comments. The number is 416-413-3959. Maybe you heard something with our interview with Dr. Andrews that you want to talk to Kevin about. 416-413-3959. Or, of course, any question about the Blue Jays or baseball. Mr. Barker,
I just want to ask you, because when you were saying that, it made me think, do you think baseball will ever fix this?
No.
The better question, do you think it's fixable?
Well, Jeff Passan will join us, and we'll ask him, because he's written the book on pitching injuries. And we'll ask Jeff, look, I'll tell the story we were telling off air later when Jeff joins us. I'm skeptical. I think it's, you can legislate, you can try to bring the stolen base back into baseball, but unless guys get paid for stealing bases, they're not going to steal. But I mean, professional athletes make, you know what they do every day? Well, you're a professional. They make business decisions every day.
Yep.
They make business decisions every day. If I do this,
I can make it 3 or 4 years. I get paid. I'll never have to work again.
If I do this, what's the reward? I mean, this is one of the reasons that guys use steroids.
Absolutely.
Guys made a decision. I got two ways to go. One, I don't use steroids. I play in the minors for 5 years. Maybe get a shot at the majors. Two, I use steroids. Maybe only get in the majors for a year, but
it's better than 5 years in the minor leagues.
Whole
teams are being relevant because of how hard they throw and how much they spin it.
Yeah.
I mean, just look at the Rays. So I just don't know how you talk whole organizations out of trying to do this and trying to be relevant because of it. I just don't know how you do that.
Let's bring in Jeff Passan. He's ESPN's MLB insider. Jeff, thanks for joining us on Blair and Barker. It was great having. This is the perfect timing. We had Dr. James Andrews on
a little earlier.
Too. Wow, and you know, walking through a lot of his concerns about pitching, and it was funny because I asked him. Okay, this is a really simple question. I said, why did it take baseball this long to decide it had to do something? And his answer was, you can tell by my pause that I actually don't have an answer for this. And then, of course, he went on to kind of explain, basically it comes down to economics in his mind. I'll ask you this. Like, we know they've got this committee. Is this, one, is it going to make a difference? And two, are they finally doing something about this? Or, Jeff, can they even do anything about it?
Yes, they can definitely do something about it. Is it going to make a difference? I think a lot of it depends on what they do. The ability to institute change into large organizations that have, decades of built-in ways that they go about something. It's a really difficult problem to solve for. At the same time, if you look at this holistically and don't just look at it at the major league level, then yes, there are things that they can do to help the sport, but it's not going to help the sport for 5 years, mm-hmm. at least.
Yeah.
Like this is a problem to solve for the 2030s, not the 2020s. And that is like, it is sad. It is damning, but it's truthful because, Kevin, I was listening just before I came on, you were saying like what can be done about this within big league organizations? Not a whole lot right now.
Yeah.
The thing that you need to do if you are Major League Baseball is figure out a way to disincentivize the things that are likeliest contributing to these issues. Ooh. Right. And what can we say are the likeliest contributors? I think the clearest one is velocity,
yep.
and max intent pitching. And how do you do that? You can't say to someone, you know what? You throw really hard and you're probably more effective because you throw really hard, but stop throwing really hard. No, it can't be a restriction on what you do. It has to be an emphasis on what you're not doing. And what players aren't doing right now is going deep into games, right? So if you can somehow incentivize pitchers that going deeper into games is more valuable and more important than throwing hard, then guess what? They are the workers. And workers quite often are going to change how they work based on what employers are looking for. So if scouts aren't going out and recruiting or scouting guys who have to be 95 to 100 and prioritizing them. And if colleges aren't recruiting guys who can only throw 90 miles per hour plus, and if youth tournaments aren't awarding guys because they throw harder than their peers, if the incentives are in place such that you say that throwing hard is not the most important or only thing we're looking for, then the players who have greater aspirations are going to follow right along with those different incentives.
Jeff, you do know that Dr. Andrews was saying something about heart rate, and he started making me think, what if Major League Baseball made the rosters bigger, allowing more pitchers to be on there, right? I know it's 13 now. Maybe they make the rosters bigger. Maybe there's more mound visits. Maybe they're how many pitching changes you can make. Now, obviously, you're rolling your eyes. I can't see you, but I'm assuming you're doing that because, the games will go a little bit slower. But Dr. Andrews was making the point that when the heart rate goes up, you tend to want to force things to go faster, right? I'm making it spin more. I want to throw it through the catcher instead of to the catcher. And if you're Major League Baseball and you're thinking to yourself, if I can't make any other changes because of union and, just the optics of the way the game looks, maybe I can change some rules when it just comes to making the heart rate, forcing it down a little bit. Am I onto something or am I reaching?
I think you're reaching, but yeah. I don't think you're reaching necessarily for the reasons that you think. If you expand the roster, it's not going to change the behavior of teams. All it's going to do, in fact, is embolden them to stick with what they've got right now because they've got more leeway to tell guys to go out there and let it eat all the time because they have, you know, two more backup pens there. I think the answer to this, or an answer to this at least, is restricting the number of pitchers. Now, let me walk through what that looks like with you. If your goal is to get pitchers to go deeper into games for multiple reasons, reason number one, if you have to get deeper into games, then you are less likely to max yourself out early on. Reason number two, because the deeper guys go into games, the more likely they are to be stars. I just think that's a truism that baseball has lost, and that half the player population now comprised of pitchers really have no ability to go out and be stars because they just don't play long enough and they're not in the most important parts of the game. So if you incentivize going deeper into games, then all of a sudden you have to, if you have roster limits and option limits, right? And by option, I mean the ability to send a guy up and down on the train between the big leagues and AAA. Now, the fear there is that teams are just going to say, well, okay, if that's what we have to do, then we're just going to make everybody a three-inning pitcher. Doesn't matter. That's what we're going to train guys to be, to throw three innings at a time, and they're going to do it every 4 days, and that's, you know, that's the way that it's going to be. So then you would have to legislate something else in place, like the double hook, which, you know, if your starting pitcher gets taken out before X point in the game, then you lose your designated hitter for the rest of the game, for example. And suddenly it's like you're legislating the size of the roster. You're legislating how long pitchers have to pitch. The more legislation you have, the more unintended consequences you have. And that's why, guys, this problem is so difficult to solve. With the pitch clock, it was pretty simple. Our games are going too long, so we're going to restrict how long players have to mess around during an at-bat, and that will, we believe, shave time off of games. It worked. Worked extremely well. It was a total silver bullet. There is no silver bullet with the arm. I wish there were. I'm going to a high school baseball game right now, and I think my kid might be pitching today. And I'm going to be nervous the entire time because he throws a baseball really hard. And, you know, who knows what's happening in his elbow at this point. Mm-hmm. It's like it is this permanent threat for every person who's throwing a baseball that doing what he does well, doing what he loves, could also be the thing that brings about his downfall in the game. Like, it is so cruel, but it's the reality of the sport right now, and it has to change. Guys, it's had to change for a long time now.
Yeah.
Like, I wrote my book 8 years ago, and all week I've been like, oh, so now you're listening. Mm. Okay. Like, it's about time, but what have you been waiting for?
You know, Jeff, the owners are not going to like that because the more you pitch, the more they will have to pay you. Now they know, well, what if I just pay one guy that can give me a quality start every single time, and I'll give nine dudes the same amount of money I'd have to give one guy? You know, owners are never going to buy into that, right? It's all about money. That's why this thing, it's not an easy fix, right?
Yeah, you're right. But the counter to that is right now, think about all of the money that they're lighting on fire when guys go on the injured list.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking with Spencer Strider and a bunch of guys like that. It's like anything else, Jeff. I mean, you covered baseball long enough. It is remarkable how much impetus stuff gets when it starts costing ownership money. Like it really is. It's a great motivator. Hey, you made a point on Sunday Night Baseball, and you've written about this and talked about it a couple of times since. I thought it was really. Like, I understand that there's stuff the Players Association has to do. I understand there's a performative aspect. You've got to respond to things. But
I didn't like what I saw last Saturday where you had the competing Saturday news releases. Now, again, I understand both sides are probably doing their own thing, but it just seemed to me, it just seemed to me to be an unnecessary distraction. And I'm wondering from your point of view, what role does the Players Association have in this?
I mean, the Players Association provides the labor, right? The players are the ones. You can sit here and say, oh, the teams are losing value. They're businesses. Businesses lose value all the time. The players are the ones who are putting the bodies on the line. So they're the ones who should be the most interested in this. And I think the part of this that bothers them is what I was talking about earlier, that they are simply responding to what the market is asking for, mm-hmm. right? If teams went to players and said, you know what, we are going to value getting deeper into games. We are going to prioritize that over how hard you can throw. Guess what would happen at Driveline and Tread and all of these other think tanks that produce the pitchers who now are regularly throwing upward of 100 miles per hour? They would adjust their training protocols to make the strongest, longest pitchers that they can, right? Mm-hmm. They would de-emphasize velocity, because if what's going to get you paid is innings, then they would train you to throw more innings, and they would train you to be healthier. Right now, they are training you to throw the ball as hard as you possibly can and to spin it like we've never seen balls spun before. So I think ultimately this does go back on the institution of Major League Baseball that oversees all this. And that's why I appreciate that they have really bright minds working on the problem. Now, what is their solution going to be? And how much does that account for what the players' feelings are? That's why I think it's imperative that they not only talk with people who have played the game in the past and how they went about it, but the people who are playing the game right now and the ones who are going to have the consequences. And, you know, the players are skeptical, and they should be. They should be skeptical because there were a lot of things that they brought up with regards to the pitch clock that Major League Baseball did not institute. Now, that is something that the players bargained away during collective bargaining talks when they gave MLB not just the rights to change rules, but to change rules within a 60-day window. It used to be that MLB would have to propose something and then wait a year to institute it. Now they can do it right away. And so I think that, you know, that's the reason that the pitch clock was brought up by the union, because I think there's still some saltiness over how that's been handled and how players feel like MLB hasn't been listening to them. MLB has to listen to players. Even if the players' perspectives are not backed up by science or not backed up by research, you still have a chance to glean something from every conversation you have with somebody. And I may disagree with someone from the league, a player I talk with. I disagree with people's perspectives all the time, but that doesn't mean I can't learn from them. That doesn't mean I can't use what they're saying to question what I believe to be true and to force me to have that much more evidence backing up my point so that my belief is firm, strong, convicted, and more than anything, correct.
Jeff, your recent article for ESPN on sort of the Iron Man and, you know, and the virtues, if you want to call it that, of playing 162 games kind of got me thinking, because one of the things that when we talk to Bo Bichette, you ask him about his goals for a season or something like that, he will mention 162. He wants to play every day. It means something to him. And, you know, I find it interesting that in this day and age where sports science and analytics play such a role in setting the lineup and in determining days off, you have to be a certain type of player to be able to force a team to let you play 162, don't you?
Hell,
like
yeah.
You've got to be Freddie Freeman or Mookie Betts or somebody like that.
I listen, I want a team full of 162ers. I think it's a mindset and a mentality as much as anything. And, you know, Whit Merrifield spent some time in Toronto. You guys got to meet him, and I'm sure you know that he's a guy who because he debuted as late as he did at 27 years old, he doesn't take for granted that being on the field is so important. And, you know, the greatest, this goes for pitchers especially, but it goes for everyday players too. The greatest ability is availability. And the idea that there are still some guys out there who, amid all of the data that tells us, you know, maybe a day off here might be good for you, they're like, no, I want to be out there. This is a privilege. I get to play Major League Baseball every day. This is a job I take extraordinarily seriously. And, you know, Juan said it to me, like, I feel like I want to be out there because I feel like I give our team a better chance to win. And it's just awesome to, you know, I have so much respect for those guys. Marcus Semien, you know, had he not missed a few games during the COVID season, would be at his 800 consecutive game today, I believe. And, there, you know, you guys saw he was in every day in Toronto, too.
Yep.
And when you can rely on someone like that, I mean, it's just such a blessing to have a reliable guy who, you know, when he has a little nick here and there, he's still going to be out there anyway because he cares. And that care goes a really long way. And I think sets the right example. And you end up with cultures like the Atlanta Braves right now, where every one of their everyday players comes into a season saying, I'm going to play 162.
And, you know, it's interesting because one of our neighbors, his son, he doesn't play baseball anymore, but he did for the longest time. And his favorite player was Derek Jeter. And one of the reasons, and they used to go to a couple of Jays games a year, but one of the reasons he liked Derek Jeter, he told me on time, because I can go see the Yankees play, and I know he's going to play. Like, my favorite player is going to play. Maybe not every now and then towards the end of his career he didn't. But there is, I think sometimes we lose sight of that, too. You know, that's an important part of being a star and building a relationship with your fans, is being out there every day.
Totally. I believe Derek Jeter, and I'm paraphrasing here, has said that one of the reasons he liked playing every day was because he never knew if it was going to be the day when someone was coming to hit, to watch him at the ballpark, and he didn't want someone to leave disappointed.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, we don't have an NBA team here in Kansas City, but I was just so, and I, you know, I'm a very, like, I'll watch an NBA game if it's on, but I don't go, you know, hunting for basketball. I was curious, though, like, how many Iron Men are there in the NBA right now? And I was looking through the games played. Oh, my God. Like, the best players in the league are all missing 10 games a year.
Yeah.
It's wild to me.
It's by design, absolutely wild.
Yeah. It is. That's the part. And I thought to myself, like, if I were in an NBA city and I got a season ticket package, I would feel let down.
Yeah.
If I'm there at a Lakers game and LeBron James is taking a rest day, I understand why he is, you know, just on the cusp of 40 years old at this point. He's been doing this for, you know, tens and tens of thousands of minutes, like playing in an NBA game. I play one pickup basketball game and I'm sore for the next 4 days.
Yeah.
Now, I am not LeBron James by any means, but point is, it's a demanding and consuming sport. But still, if he were not in the lineup that day, I would feel like I got ripped off. And that's the beauty of the 162ers in baseball. As much as they are there for their team, they are also there for the fans.
Jeff, really good of you to do this, my friend. Thanks so much.
Thanks, buddy.
Pleasure's always mine, boys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Jeff Passan, ESPN's MLB insider, joining us in that.
That's the organization's fault. They've told the player that you can play less and make just as much money. And players are like, oh, you really, really? I don't have to play 162 games. When I was a player, and I hate to say that all the time, but when I was a player, it was about playing.
Parker,
if you didn't make no money. It was real simple. Nowadays, you don't have to play to make tons of money. And the players know that. And they're like, yeah, I can get geared up for 130 games instead of 162 games.
You would have loved to have played 162 games in a full Major League season.
Absolutely. Would have loved to have that opportunity.
That is it for us. Again, no Blue Jays baseball today. It is an off day. They will start a 3-game series against the Colorado Rockies tomorrow. We'll get you set for that with the skipper, John Schneider.
Even though there isn't any baseball tonight, have a great night. Chat again tomorrow.